Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech on Black Hollywood Live. Today, Steve Wozniak has a new school he's bringing through. Google is opening a new tech center, and Black Panther has a new trailer. Let's go.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Live's Geek Nerd Tech.
Hey!
In honor of the new Black Panther trailer.
Okay. Let's go, baby.
Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech, the show we break down tech news, nerd culture from a black and brown geek perspective. I'm Joe Braswell. I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Akili Shine.
Yes, sir.
How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. I'm doing excellent.
That's what I thought.
Exactly.
That's what I figured. you seem good as ever.
Exactly.
We got my man Vince Staples, Long Beach's own Vince Staples.
That's right. With his
songs, I love. Actually, I like this album. People were trying to hate on this album. I actually like this album a lot.
Album's great.
You know, I like the song.
My brother's smart too.
Yeah,
he's very smart. Yeah. Have you caught some interviews on
yeah.
him?
Yeah. Oh no, I'm big Vince Staples supporter. In fact, Vince Staples is a name that we wanted to use for a show that we were working on. I tried to get Vince Staples on there, and people were saying no.
Right.
Like I was crazy, but I thought it was a good name. Anyway, yeah, so, but speaking of Vince Staples, I mean, we'll get to this a little later on, but, you know, he shows up in the Black Panther trailer.
Yes, he does.
We'll get to it later, man. Man, these trailers, both these trailers, their use of music, yeah. Like the way they cut, I don't know who cuts those trailers, but I don't know, the way they cut the trailer with the VO from the movie,
mm-hmm.
with a crazy mix, like in the middle of dude saying some monologue about Wakanda, you hear Vince Staples go, yeah. It's like dope. Like I haven't really seen anything like integration like that. It's really, I don't know, I love it.
Yeah, I love the juxtaposition. I thought it was dope too.
Yeah, and you know, I like to run the Running Jewels in the first trailer, your favorite group.
Exactly, my favorite. Best group of all time.
But I love Vince Staples in the second group. But anyway, we'll get to that in a second, but want to talk a lot about some few things. You know, Google, always in the news, and not necessarily Google, but the parent company of Alphabet. The Alphabet has a company called Sidewalk Labs, and they're in the process of doing something pretty revolutionary. Sidewalk Labs is a subsidiary or spinoff of Google, all Alphabet. It's all fine, but bottom line is, they're trying to build something called Internet City. They're trying to take over 800 acres of Toronto.
That's it.
Only 800 acres to build Internet City. Yeah, like I feel like, you know, this what is proposed. It's like a new district on the waterfront. It's going to be kind of like a Silicon Beach, Silicon Valley thing in Toronto. And it's like, yeah, it's just a new tech hub with all kinds of to invite tech businesses in and Google is themselves running it. And yeah, man.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. I mean, when they first thought of this, you know, they dubbed it Google Island.
Yeah.
The fact that, you know, you're able to have a part of the city that you're going to develop to really bring in some really dope advanced technology to kind of like do some beta testing on some certain things to see how you can apply them to, you know, this building a city, you know what I'm saying? And
yep.
I think that's fresh. Like you're talking about drivable, self-driving cars, all sorts of things that just kind of help the management of people and the commerce, the convergence of all those things, I think is awesome.
So this is sort of like a way to take a division or an area and then use that as a blueprint to maybe how we can build and master plan further areas and further cities.
Exactly.
If it runs efficiently, then it could be great.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Great case study for other cities.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes. I'm excited about it. Also, Google is in the process of right this very second of doing. Google is in the process of testing the ability to add third-party accounts to your Gmail on iOS, which would kind of be a game changer in terms of Google, because you know we do that now on our iMessage. It's the only reason I don't really mess with Google in that way, because on my iPhone and on my Apple, I can add all of our Kelchris emails, Robinson Park emails, MTV emails, whatever else we got going on. And Google, you can't do that. It's just Google. But Google is testing a way you can add all the third parties onto your iOS, and then that would be kind of cool, right?
Yeah.
Was that something that you would be into?
I mean, I know a lot of people still use Microsoft Outlook. A lot of people use Mail. Right. I personally use Mail. But to be able to have, you know, the third party for, like, for instance, I don't use the Google Suite for Robeson Parks,
right.
But to be able to have that, you know, streamlined through a Gmail would be kind of cool, because right. I do have like three other Gmail accounts, and just to have that as, you know, right there on the hub would be kind of fresh. So I think that's a dope innovation, whether or not Apple will allow that, because as of right now, you can only get it through the app, the Google app. But if Apple would allow that, that would be kind of game changing for Google.
It would be game changing for Google. Google, and we talked about this before about the idea of Google setting up a situation where they have all their they are doing this now. They're setting up a situation where they have all a counterpart to all of Mac and all of Apple's stuff and all of Microsoft's things. And if you want the alternative to any of these Microsoft products, Google has them. If you want an alternative to a lot of the Apple products, Google has them. If you want an alternative to the phone itself, Google has that. So at a certain point, they keep going at this rate, and on top of owning search through Google and YouTube, I don't know. Google might just make a flip a switch, and we might all be Google. I mean, do you think that's a possibility?
It's definitely a possibility. I mean, coming, Google's a giant. Like they are not toe to toe or face to face with any of the big guys, Apple, Facebook, or whatever. Like Google is diverse. I mean, Alphabet, right. So much diversity in their portfolio. I mean, their bandwidth to be able to. I mean, they pretty much organized like human history, like the searchability for anything that you could possibly want. They have organized,
right.
I mean, that this is a huge achievement unto itself, and the fact that they, like you said, they have software, wow. They have platforms, they have hardware, they have all those things.
That's a crazy statement you just said,
but it's a
absolutely
fact.
A fact.
It's a fact.
They have organized human history.
No one has done that.
Not just by text search and video search.
That's it.
They've basically categorized the entire internet.
Yeah.
And they've, you know, that's kind of crazy. And then also from a video standpoint, too.
Yeah, I mean, think about just Google Books.
And giving people, yeah.
They have every book digitized. Yeah, down there, you know?
And magazine. I just Googled an article from something, and it came up in a Jet magazine from like 1961. It just came up in Google something.
That's
like,
crazy.
What is this? A PDF just popped up in Google.
That's crazy.
So yeah. I don't know. Didn't even know that existed. So yeah, that's
Google is the real Library of Congress, my man.
Wow, that's deep. That's even. And we talk about the Google City, like what's going to happen with you know this other thing. That's we're really getting to a really crazy space right now.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I mean, we're going to continue on this Google theme here. Google Maps, bruh. Google Maps has already like mapped the whole world. You can map your street.
Not Wakanda.
Not Wakanda. No one knows about Wakanda.
Exactly.
You got to go through the waterfall.
Exactly.
But you know where it is.
Google,
but
Google ain't done that now.
No, not quite. But Google has, they started mapping out planets. They let you go to over 12 planets and moons. So it's one thing for you to be able to go Google Earth, but you actually go to our moon and, you know, Google map the moon, zoom in, check out areas of the moon that are explored, unexplored. You do the same thing with moons of other planets, same thing with planets themselves. This is like, I don't know what an 8 to 12 year old Joe Braswell would do with like Google Maps, like exploring planets. And I was like looking encyclopedias. I remember when I was a teenager when Encarta was out and stuff, like CD-ROMs. I was like, this is the future. But if this was out, I just can't imagine what it blows my mind what our kids have access to these days. But what do you think of this?
Yeah, the accessibility is amazing. The fact that, you know, we can use, you know, satellite imaging to stitch together these photos and then create a 3D, you know, realistic model of what, you know, these planets and moons look like, and then be able to go into them and show the dimensionality and texture of the planet. That's fantastic, dude. And the fact that that's only going to get better and better and more specific and exact, like you said, like as a kid, I mean, come on, like you have every tool to geek out about. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
This is awesome.
Yeah, I don't know. These are three major sort of Google stories in a row, but yeah, it's really just as we're saying this, it really just sort of like blowing my mind a little bit about where Google is, but we'll see.
Yeah.
But speaking of another tech giant, Apple is about to appeal a 5-year-long patent battle after they lost about $439 million. I mean, this is they've been ordered to pay, you know, almost $500 million.
Mm-hmm.
After losing a suit to a company called Virinet X, they filed the suit back in 2010. It's been going on for a long time, and it's really it's over. I can't tell if it's a patent troll situation or if it's like an actual real thing, but. I mean, I'm confused in the story. Is this a real trademark infringement or this is a patent troll situation?
I mean, I feel like, people would argue that they're one and the same, but maybe the motivation behind it is where you get that moniker of patent troll. But if I come up with something, some intellectual property, and I file the patent and I just sit on it and I don't have any intent to actually bring it to market, and I'm just waiting for a company to bring it to market so that I can sue them, then... That's an interesting strategy, interesting business model. But, I mean, I think that's what Apple is trying to advocate.
Did.
Exactly. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, no, I'm saying, but that's interesting because it's one thing if you said one key word in there, if you invent it. Because usually patent trolls are like, they'll look at podcasting, for instance, and they'll scan podcasting and find one element that makes podcasting, you know, hard, impossible to do and realize there's a loophole and no one patent that. And then they'll go patent that and be like, I own podcasting.
Okay.
I'm suing everybody.
Yeah.
You know, which has actually happened. That's a true story.
Right.
People do this all the time. This find stuff like, oh, the iPhone, huh? Did you patent the corner of the screen, left-hand corner?
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. I didn't invent the left-hand corner, but this is a little different.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to ask you. Like, in your opinion, personal opinion, is this different from that? Or is this like, you know, what's the difference? Like, I've invented something. I'm just waiting for someone to try to use it.
I mean,
if they do, I got you.
This specific patent was related to like the FaceTime elements of the iPhone.
Right.
So I'm sure that there may be some dope stuff that they were able to patent, and that's what they're saying. Like, yo, I mean, they're getting $1.20 to $1.80 per iPhone that was purchased because of something that they didn't get, you know, the proper licensing for. And so,
yeah, that's true.
Hey, I mean, maybe it's a loophole, maybe it's a part of the game, but. Sucks,
right?
But hey, I mean, I kind of respect the guy that's doing it, to be honest. It's like you figured out the loophole in a legal way. Hey,
is this a can't knock the hustle situation in your opinion, or is it just kind of like I mean, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it, but also on one hand, it's like it is Apple and they are a giant. It's like, look, if you can get a $500 million on Apple, more power to you. It took them 5 years. Apple's gonna appeal.
I think it's ebb and flow, man, because just like...
Don't spend a $500 million, because
hey,
Apple's going to try to get back.
It's ebb and flow. I feel like a lot of these big companies are... I mean, this is a big statement, but I think a lot of these companies kind of steal a lot, too,
mm-hmm.
and don't get caught, or the people that actually do the hard work and invent stuff don't get the credit,
right.
The financial reward. So, I mean, hey, this is a part of it, too. Like, okay, well, you've maybe created the iPhone as a device, but I figured out that there's some certain elements that you didn't create. And so I imagined it, and you brought it to market. Now you're gonna be penalized for it.
Makes sense. I got you. That makes sense. All right. Well, speaking of bringing stuff to market, our friends at Vizio, who's known for their wonderful flat screen TVs and their quality. They're getting into the sound game right now. There's increasingly thin profile home theater displays and screens. Built-in speakers have gotten smaller and smaller. Adding a sound bar to your TV can bring big movies and TV shows alive with crystal clear room filling sound.
Oh yeah.
Vizio sound bars are powered by by DTS technology. You get that in movie theater. DTS technology giving you extraordinary sound experience. You can redefine your home theater experience with the Vizio 36-inch 2.1 soundbar system.
I love it.
CNET's editor choice the first soundbar that is a CES I'm sorry, let's say this again. CNET Editor's Choice and the first soundbar to earn 5 stars at CNET.
That's dope.
Earning unbeatable savings, combine your best deals of the year and display with these soundbars. Listen, the soundbar is where it's at. Vizio getting in the game. I mean, we have a lot of people getting in the game these days in the soundbar situation, but Vizio seems to know what they're doing with the DTS, so check it out, the Vizio soundbar.
Hey, let's go.
And I'm going to check it out. Vizio is allegedly going to send us some soundbars to check out. I'm just calling Vizio out on the air. Vizio, we need our soundbars.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, a TV would be nice to go with the soundbars, but it's a soundbar would be cool. Anyway, back to Apple. Apple co-founder Steve the Woz, Wozniak. He's kind of been laying in the cut. I mean, Wozniak's quietly done a lot. He's invented a lot along the way. People, it's all been Steve Jobs. But in the gaming space, in the hardware space, and in just all kinds of, Woz is still in the mix. He's still rich in the cut. But now Wozniak is doing an online tech teaching platform called WozU, like Wozniak University. It's a way to sort of get software engineers and he wants to have an initiative that gives at least 30 physical locations around the world on courses on everything from software engineering, information technology, cybersecurity. He basically wants to be able to sort of be able to make technology and teaching people high-level technology something that is, you know, and important. And this is something that he's launching. It's like he wants to be able to, the overall goal is to increase interest in the STEM careers, science, technology, engineering, arts. I'm sorry. I mean, it's wrong. Woz is calling this the STEAM version of this as opposed to the STEM. Woz is saying the STEAM careers are science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics. So he thinks he's adding the arts into the mathematics as opposed to the STEM, which I like.
Yeah, him and his brother, Steve Jobs, they always said they wanted to fuse technology with humanities. That's something right. They've always said they were about, and giving the information or the access to the common man, you know? And so I think this is him kind of just fueling that in his own personal evolution and where we are with, you know, different platforms and subscription models and all that stuff, being able to bring this to market. So I think it's kind of cool that, you know, he advocates that it doesn't require, you know, a large investment to be able to obtain these schools. These skills, it doesn't require you having to go to the traditional conventional school to be able to have opportunities in this field. And so, hey, let's see whether or not this platform launches and if it has great content. I mean, they said that it's up now. You're able to like register and you're able to get some free stuff. But I'm interested to see how much it's going to cost, to be honest. So
yeah, we'll see. Like, yeah, is it because is this just a new business idea and a business model for Woz, or is it just something that is it more altruistic than that?
No. I think this is he's trying to make some bread off this.
Okay, so this isn't like I'm trying to help kids, you know, in inner cities get into the STEAM program.
I think this is a revenue stream for him.
Okay. Well,
we'll see.
He does, you know, he needs the money. We know.
Exactly.
We know he needs the money. This is really, we talked about Twitter a while back and like where's Twitter going and all the interesting ways that Twitter is sort of staying relevant, and if they can just figure out how to do some revenue streams, it's interesting. But this is an example, this next story is an example of Twitter is staying relevant in the culture and using their influence to push culture and push maybe some social change as well. There's a hashtag going around called #MeToo, and it's basically encouraging women to share their experiences of sexual assault through this hashtag. Alyssa Milano, who's the boss, tweeted out this thing. It's like, if you've been sexually harassed by or assaulted, write #MeToo and reply to this tweet. And the response has been ridiculous, and it continues to be ridiculous. And it's really interesting. It's a really interesting way to talk about something that is not talked about enough, but you know, in light of what's going on with Harvey Weinstein, and before that Roger Ailes, and before that and after that you know, Bill O'Reilly, and before that Donald Trump, our president. I mean, this is something that's
cool.
You're a president. But I think this is amazing.
Yeah, I think it's amazing too. And another great example of how we can use a social platform to really, you know, reach a level of advocacy that can bring about change. And I think that, you know, what we've been seeing with the whole, you know, Weinstein stuff is just the culture, you know, the climate of this stuff and how it's kind of kept, it, you know, in secrecy. And a lot of people, a lot of women feel like they don't have the I would say opportunity and maybe just like the unification. I think now you're seeing that groundswell. And I think having the platform of Twitter and to be able to express yourself that way, I think is a great way to raise awareness and to really change this culture. I mean, because this is some sick stuff that's been happening for generations, for decades, especially in Hollywood. And so I'm glad that a lot of power players are speaking up. So
yeah, and also like there's a lot of I think that there's a lot of I don't know why I'm surprised or seem to be struck by the magnitude of the, not the magnitude, just the amount of women, famous women that are coming forward, not just with Harvey Weinstein stories, but with other stories, which encourage other women to come through, which is, because this is a problem that is systemic and it's not just a Hollywood thing at all. It's
across the board.
Across the board. Yeah. So it's just, men of power, taking advantage of women who aren't in power. So this is good stuff. All right. So Twitter again. This is more back sticking with Twitter. They're introducing more anti-abuse rules. There was a 24-hour boycott of social media when Twitter suspended Rose McGowan's account. Because she talked about just back to the sexual abuse thing and. She posted a private number in a tweet of someone talk about Harvey Weinstein, talk about sexual abuse, ended up posting a private number, violated all kind of privacy laws. Twitter boycotted her because she violated some rules, but Twitter said that they're going to take a new anti-abuse status and rules. How do you navigate between, trying to stay on the right side of a cultural movement and an issue, but also trying to maintain some order within your social media ecosystem?
Yeah, I think it's a delicate and difficult balancing act. I mean, because it's like some things like are appropriate,
right,
or more appropriate, and then other things are completely inappropriate and disrespectful and demeaning. So it's like, how as a company do you say these are our company policy terms and conditions that everyone has to abide by, but then you have, I guess you got to have some flexibility within the rule, or some maybe a little bit more gray area within the rule. And maybe maybe it is case by case. But I mean, I feel like if I was, the CEO of Twitter, or I was on the board or whatever, or I had some type of position of power, that would be a difficult thing to put in writing, like how and then to actually enforce, like how do we as a company have a set of ethics or morals that we abide by and we what's your take on that?
It's tricky. I default to the whole, this feels like just kind of a big PR effort because you got to say and do something. But at the same time, I mean, I think the announcement that we're going to be, sort of more socially active or more proactive or have different rules as a reaction to something that they did that seemed wrong or bad, it doesn't send the right message. It just sort of feels like Twitter should be actively doing these things anyway, and then how they police their site and do their business it should be separate. In other words, I run my site how I run my site. I run my ecosystem. Separately from that, I'm doing all these right things over here socially. It doesn't feel like there should be a reactionary thing. I don't know. That's kind of my take, but I don't know.
I mean, but everything that comes up, and everything that comes up as an event, like you have to have some type of reaction to it.
Yeah.
It's like, so I mean, something like as ground swelling as this, the Weinstein, right. the Weinstein thing is like, well, that's a response, not a reaction.
But it's like you put out statements like, although we stand with Rose McGowan, we cannot divulge people's private information, or we can't use our private information to do that, because like that, like if she said, Harvey Weinstein's an asshole, everyone within the sound of this tweet should go kill that motherfucker. You can't condone that. So some things that sort of fall within regular decorum and law and reason, but it's hard because the law of the land, the law of the municipal laws and state laws and federal laws don't apply to the internet.
Yeah.
So, you can't go run up on someone and say F you in real life, but you can't have the internet.
Yeah.
So you can say all kinds of stuff via Twitter that you can't just run up on someone and say or do.
Why can't you?
not anything. I don't know what kind of laws we have. I don't know what kind of neighborhood you grew up in.
That's very true.
Very true. We'll see what kind of country we will be in very soon.
Right.
So, in the interest of talking about our Blade Runner world, man.
Yeah, this is what we're talking about.
Like, so, in the Piccadilly Lights. I love London, Piccadilly.
Piccadilly.
The Piccadilly Lights in London. So this is a new flashy billboard in Piccadilly Circus that basically, you know, the idea of this is it knows what car you drive, what you're feeling, what you're doing. This is where we're getting into the whole
Minority Report
walking by. Yep. You know, knowing stuff. I mean, this is inevitable, but what do you think of this? Is this invasive or is this kind of cool?
I think it's appropriate for where we are. I think that customization and specificity, and we want a strong sense of personalization with how we come in contact with products and brands. Right. And so I think that using the technology to help with that, I think, is good. Like, I think if we started, I think the level of saturation would change my opinion on that. Like, this is like a one case study of it. Like, but imagine if that was on every street or everywhere you went, then I would feel quite differently. But I feel like this could lead to that for sure.
Yeah,
but
I mean, this is Piccadilly Circus. But what happens when this is in Times Square?
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
That's definitely where it's headed, so.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But it's inevitable. I mean, like I said, personalization, customization, we want that. Like, right. We've moved away from just these flat, broad, sell me the products in this old conventional way. Like, I want to feel like the brand is speaking to me directly. Right. And so this is an opportunity. This is a vehicle for a brand to be able to do that.
Right.
So I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Piccadilly Lights. That's my favorite idea. That's Steve Barry about the Piccadilly Circus. I don't know why. That's ridiculous. All right. And then... what's the last thing I'm gonna skip because it's not long. Yeah. But I just want to hurry up and just get to the
Wakanda,
the
baby.
Thing I want to talk about the whole time is Wakanda.
Wakanda, baby.
Black Panther. Yeah. Coogler.
My man.
Jordan.
Let's go.
Let's eat, bro. Bozeman.
Let's eat.
What's going down?
Let's eat, bro.
My girl, Lupita Nyong'o. What's my other sister's name? Angela Bassett.
Let's go.
Forest Whitaker in this joint too?
Everybody's in this joint.
City 48 in this one?
Right.
Everybody's in this, man. The cast looks amazing. Look, for those of you who don't know, I've been under a rock, the new trailer for Black Panther dropped. There's a lot of things I want to say about this. First of all, Marvel is doing, I mean, I can't even remember a rollout. Maybe this new Star Wars movie. That and the buzz, the rollout, everything is going perfectly.
Yeah.
Like everything that they, the way they're doing it, the way they announced it,
yep.
The way they hired Coogler, with the exception of Ava DuVernay dropping out. But from the moment they hired Coogler, from the moment Coogler said, I'll do it, I got to do it my way, the fact that Kevin Feige and Marvel said, okay, they never do that. They kind of gave him control as a Marvel movie's going to give you. And they just like everything he's doing. He keeps, I'm doing this. Like, okay, do it. And now, like, we're seeing the first images came back. We're like, what? The cast came out. You're like, who? And then the trailer came out. It was ridiculous. Now the second trailer, it just gets better and better. Not just from what I'm saying visually, but just from as we talked about earlier, the way the trailer's cut. It has a certain level of auteurship and artisanship to this. That is making me really, really excited, and it looks dope as F.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic to see, like, black folks, and I don't care if it's a fake African nation. I mean, you don't know if it's fake, but I mean, if it's a fake African nation, I love all the mythology. I can't be more excited about this.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit it on the head. You got the mythology, you got the action, you got the character development, you have the special effects, you have all these things. And the fact that it's a black cast, black director, like, man, it's wins. We're checking off all boxes. And I mean, I think this will be huge for us as a people, as a culture, to be able to have something like this reflected so highly in culture. You know what I'm saying? So I love the trailer. I think it was awesomely constructed. I mean, I hope that from our conversation from last week, I hope that they didn't put too much in there. I hope that there's still a lot of gems that we will see when we actually watch the movie. But I think
there was a couple plot points in there that I saw that I was like, okay. Like, there's a couple of plot points in there I saw with Michael B. Jordan in the competing Black Panther suit. So I already know that that's going to happen. But, you know, I mean, B. Jordan as a villain, I'm kind of buying it. He gets one line, this is mine, whatever he's trying to say. Whatever he said, I believe it. So,
yeah, man.
I like the idea of putting B. Jordan as the villain and then flipping him back as a hero in Creed 2. So, man.
I'm interested to see what they do marketing-wise between now and you know, February. And Black History Month is going to be lit, FYI. But yeah. Just in terms of, like, what they're going to do, like, I wonder, like, is it going to have that Wonder Woman push? I doubt it, but...
I think it will.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
There's been no movie that had the Wonder Woman push, marketing-wise.
The reason why Wonder Woman had the Wonder Woman push was for two reasons. Number one, DC and Warner Brothers needed that really badly. Once it tested the way it tested, once they got those first few tests back... And it was testing through the roof. They just went all in.
Right.
They just spent all the money because they needed to be hit. And it worked.
Right.
Because all the money, everyone saw it. I feel like Marvel doesn't need this to be a hit per se.
Shoot.
But because they don't need that. Marvel doesn't need a hit. Marvel's got hits.
Yeah, they don't need a hit.
But once the tests come back, if this test through the roof, like it's tracking right now already through the roof. When those first tests come back, I feel like you'll see, because it's Disney money, I feel like you'll see them go all
in. I hope so.
In
I hope so. That would be fantastic. Because
they want black folks. And they
exactly. They want people of color, yeah.
They're coming all in on this one. So we'll see. We'll see. I think that we're going to, you know.
And I think, just my last note on this, when you juxtapose it to the other... The other movies in the Marvel pantheon, like the tone of this one, I think is a little bit more sinistery, more dark. I love the fact that it's like it has a stronger mood, you know, like more of a serious mood. And so I love that they're giving us a little bit more edge, you know, than in other movies. So, and I think they kind of have to do that because it's starting to get a little bit kind of like plastic a little bit with how they roll out. A lot of the like the Avengers and stuff, like the same tone, same tone.
Well, also the thing about Marvel too is, because the same tone with all these movies are all. Also, the other thing about this is what people have been complaining about is all these movies are kind of, they're shot in Atlanta, so they all have that kind of same kind of like, I don't know, concrete building, nondescript city feel to them, and this just feels like way out of the box. Yeah, between like Guardians and then Thor and then this, you have three movies that are, you know, super. Their color palette is different. Sorry. No pun intended. No Black Panther, but you know,
the color palette is different.
Yeah, but what I will say, what I am interested to see in this climate, this political climate, and in this social climate, like when the thing drops. Are we going to see people be like, why you got to be a Black Panther?
Of course.
Why can't you just be a Panther?
Of course.
Why? And Trump's going to be like, I think our heroes should be like, you know.
I'm going to take a knee for this movie. Yeah.
What if I took a knee on Black Panther?
Right, exactly.
You know, I mean, there's going to be, I'm just curious as to how this movie is going to be politicized, because you know it will be.
Well, I'm interested to see if there's any like political streams within the movie.
Right.
I mean, I would really be interested to see if Coogler does that, like just as like, you know, throw some Easter eggs to us, like
peppers.
Exactly.
Well, they did a little teeny tiny bit of that when they introduced the character in Civil War.
Because, did they?
Well, no, I mean, the fact that like, you know, his father, the king, was at a United Nations thing.
Right.
He got murdered. But the whole thing is that like he was addressing the world, like he's a respected world leader. And there's reasons why, you know. So, you know, we'll see. But also in the lexicon, Wakanda's supposed to be like a small textiles in the land. You're not supposed to know that it's got it like that.
It's rich.
Yeah, so it's the most technologically advanced society ever.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool. So I don't know, man. I'm really excited about it. Have you checked out any of the Ta-Nehisi Coates version, the comic book, the one he's writing right now?
No, I haven't checked it out. I've read a few articles about, I mean, obviously him getting that.
Ta-Nehisi, sorry.
I mean, I'm a fan of him. Like, yeah. I love his books.
Yep.
I think he's a great intellectual academic.
Yep.
But yeah, I'm interested to see what he does with it. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I've just started checking it out, and yeah, man, I don't know. Like, the whole thing is very exciting and interesting. The next thing we have to talk about is Han Solo. Bring in
$1 billion, man. That would be so.
It's gonna bring in $1 billion.
That'd be so awesome. That's never been done before, right? By a black director, black film. That's never been done before. $1 billion. No way.
Right. You're right.
That's huge. It's history. We're about to make history.
Yeah. Wow. That's a poor Coogler. Was like, damn, man, let me get Coogler. By the way, we can go on about Coogler, but Coogler's got some classics on the board already. Classics on the board. He got two franchises on the board out of the gate. He did Fruitvale Station, came out of that with two franchises.
That's crazy.
Franchises. It's
his third film, dude.
That's also Spielberg shit. I mean, two franchises. Because Creed is going to go to Creed 3 or 4, at least. At least 3 or 4. Black Panther is going at least to 3. You know? So, like, I don't know, man. Is he going to direct all 3? That's it. And that's like legacy. Putting him on the board right there.
I think he's going to swing back and do some really, like, avant-garde artistic shit.
Yeah,
like,
he'll swing back.
Like you said, like a Spielberg move.
Yeah. Speaking of which,
did you see the documentary?
I did finally finish the documentary. It was excellent.
Right.
I did finally finish it. I'm actually go back and watch it again. It was, some real gems in there. We can segue to that. We'll talk about Solo in a second, but that Spielberg documentary, it's on HBO right now, if you guys haven't seen it, is excellent. But what I'm realizing is it's commemorating, like, basically sort of almost 50 years of him, you know,
killing shit.
And when I think about it in terms of 50 years, almost 50 years, because Duel was 72 or 1. Duel was 71. So, and then I think I forgot what was, before that he was directing TV.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's been directing for 50 years almost. Yeah. Because he started directing as a kid, like when 20 years old or something like that, 19 or 20, he started directing.
You mean professionally? Yeah.
Like, he was on the lot.
I think he was a teenager still.
Directed like Mannix and shit, right? Like, yeah. Directed episodes of whatever. Like, that's crazy.
It was crazy. And, he was doing it as a kid.
Yeah. I forget who, not Joan Collins, but some legend he's directing on Night Gallery or something. So, yeah man. But just thinking about how prolific he was and is and the output and how he's still going.
Right.
And he's got a couple clunkers in there, but even the clunkers got some gems in him though.
Absolutely.
Think about that. Like even like Hook, which is kind of a clunker, has got some good stuff in it.
Yeah.
He's got some, Always has got some good stuff in it. Even 1942, which is a stinker, has got some good stuff in it if you watch it. So I don't know, man.
I mean, there's no one that comes close to his body of work. No one that comes close.
No. I mean, and also you think about his homies.
Exactly.
You know,
his homies.
Like, you know, the kicking away to Scorsese.
George Lucas.
Coppola. And what's my man from Scarface? The director. Brian De Palma.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Brian De Palma.
They're all homies and they grew up together. That's crazy.
And Zemeckis. Bob Zemeckis, too. They're all in the like, there's like six of them that are in the cut.
You take them out, we have no movie industry.
I mean, Bob Zemeckis Bob Zemeckis, Martin Scorsese, Brian De Palma, George Lucas, Francis Ford Coppola, and Steven Spielberg.
That's incredible.
Yeah, that's ridiculous that they're all kind of contemporaries and kind of came up in that together. I mean, is there a new group that's like that
never.
Right now?
It will never happen again like that.
I mean, who's like the crew of young filmmakers that are coming up like that? I mean, I feel like there was that in the back in the Renaissance of of independent film back in the Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez. There was like a whole crew that came in that whole like 90s, early 90s, 92. It was probably like six or seven filmmakers that kind of came out of that. But still, I don't know if they're all around still.
Exactly.
So anyway,
because of technology, I mean, democratization of the industry, like it's too saturated. Versus then it was still a little bit more contained.
Right.
Which I think is super dope. It's like, okay, I'm going to have you work on my film. You come direct this. I'll use your shop to do the special effects. Yeah. Like, that's fucking dope, man.
I mean, because they were, yeah, man. And like, yeah, so many stuff that Spielberg did second unit on in Brian De Palma movies. Like, Steven Spielberg shot all the gangsters coming up the stairs in Scarface because he could.
Did you know that before the doc?
No.
I did not know that.
But I know those guys are always shooting each other stuff. I know Spielberg shot a bunch of stuff, like in Zemeckis things.
That's
I know
he's tight.
I know that, like, you know, and Lucas shot a bunch of second unit stuff. And, you know, I know they're always going back and forth. De Palma shot a bunch of stuff in other Spielberg movies. Like, because they're a second unit. Just go and shoot
but
this.
But still.
Yeah. Like, that is like, Spielberg, go shoot them coming up the stairs. And you look at it again, it's like cinematically perfect.
Right.
And like, oh. Anyway.
And the last note, which you've already talked about many times, I just love how he rolled with his original team. Been there every movie. I'm going to have the same composer, the same editor, the same producer.
I mean,
like, we're all going to be.
And they all together. Just got. Oscars, like John Williams, all of them. They just rolled up. Look at Kathleen Kennedy. His former assistant is running Disney, running Lucasfilm now.
It's crazy.
So, I mean, you know, that's what she's done so many movies under Spielberg, you know, started as an assistant. Now she's just running a studio, like, no problem. So, man. Yeah, that's it's crazy. And her husband, Frank Marshall, is his producer too. They're all, like, in there. You know, so it's really crazy. We're actually out of time, but we will talk about Hansel another time. But man, Spielberg was worth it. I don't know, that's all I got. Anything else? Okay, Han Solo. Han Solo. You know, Han Solo. Speaking of Kathleen Kennedy, yeah, Kathleen Kennedy famously, you know, fired the your boys.
No, not my boys.
Lloyd and
Miller.
Lloyd Miller.
Lord Miller and
Lord and Miller off of this and Ron Howard's taking over and you know. Look, Howard's a guy who is probably one of the dopest directors we have and also very prolific and also has an incredible body of work and also remembers, I heard him tell a story about seeing Star Wars for the first time and how he felt and what that meant to him in 1976. So for him to have it, he's been a huge fan of these movies on the low, so for him the opportunity to come in and do this Han Solo movie is great. But there's no buts here. It's you know, it's quietly feels like it's shaping up to be something good. I don't know. How do you feel about Ron Howard?
I think it'll be a smacker. I think it's shaping up to be fantastic.
It's Ron Howard.
Exactly. I'm excited about every rollout of from the Star Wars universe franchise, everything. I think like the Last Jedi is looking good. The Han Solo movie is looking good. Like everything. I'm not mad at it. I'm excited.
The Last Jedi is looking
fantastic.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm excited about that.
I just watched Rogue One again. I think the other night.
Okay.
It's fantastic. It was dope.
It is good.
It held up.
I wonder. I still want to. If I ever get to meet my man, I forget the director who directed it. But anyway, the guy who directed it, I would like to just see his original cut or what happened or why they brought in. You know, what's his name? Gilroy to come and reshoot for $5 million. I would like to see his original cut, but, you know, he played the role and just said, like, you know, he was a team player about it, but we'll see. Netflix is released some data, finally, and Netflix is saying that more than 8 million subscribers have watched at least one season of one series in the last 24 hours or less, and lists the top 20 shows that are binged there, which is incredible. And there's so much crazy data from this. So the idea of like 8 million people have watched an entire season in 24 hours.
Right.
That's crazy data. First of all, it's Netflix has got ridiculous data just sitting on. So they're just going to give you a little taste of what they got just to make some news because Netflix has been getting a lot of shit lately about, you're doing too much. The bloom's falling off the rose. And Netflix is releasing some data just to let people know that they're still powerhouses. But does this surprise you? This list is pretty incredible. I just want to just read this list. From I'm going to dramatically read it from 20 to 10. Number 20, Master of None, the 20th most binge show on Netflix. 19, Chewing Gum. I don't know what the hell that is. What is that?
I don't know.
Marissa, what is Chewing Gum? Do you know what that is? It's the 19th most binge show on Netflix. Glow, which is a Netflix original, you know, which is good. Love, also a Netflix original, you know, which is cool. There's that. House of Cards. Here we know about that. Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Well, I love that show. Wet Hot American Summer. I love that. Grace and Frankie, number 13. Atypical. Friends from College. Stranger Things is only number 10. Orange is the New Black, number 9. F is for Family, 8. That's that cartoon. Who knew? That's in the second season. Chewing Gum. Is this British? Is she British? Is this the one about the Nigerian girl? How come I don't know what this is? Okay. Well, there it is. All right.
Get to binging, bro.
I need to get to binging. Trailer Park Boys, which is insane to me. The Santa Clarita Diet, which is the well, that's number 6. That show's a hit on Netflix. The Ranch, the Austin Kutcher show. Just when you thought you knew, I thought that show was not good. It's the number 5th binge show. 7 Deadly Seasons. I don't know what that is. The Defenders, number 3. The top 2 are killing me. Fuller House is the 2nd most binge show in Netflix. And
Gilmore
Girls, yeah. Leader in Life, number 1. And Gilmore Girls makes sense. I know that, how big that is, but that is actually shocking to me.
Hmm. Can I speak to that?
Yes.
I've seen the top 2. I have binged the top 2.
Of course you can. But, of course you have.
I mean, I'm a woman.
Yeah, so. So as my girls binge the top 2 too. Like that's all that's on is either Fuller House or she saw a billboard. She's like, yes, Fuller House. I was like, what? So, you know, I don't know. Happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think to add more credibility to Netflix, yeah, they released this. I'd be interested to see them release more information though. I'm like, okay, this is great. But like, if you look at all your subscribers and the amount of time that they're spending on your platform, let's look at those analytics.
Yeah. Or who what about some more what's the word I'm looking for? Some more demographic breakdowns.
Yeah, like what's
women,
the
women, age, exactly. Race.
Or like, even by show. Like what's the show that they spend I'm forgetting. The hip hop show.
Oh, The Get Down.
The Get Down. Like they spent over $100 million on that.
Like, top 20.
Let's see how many people watch that. Yeah. Like, give me those analytics.
And when you say, you know, this is the number one most binge show on Netflix, what is that number? What does that mean?
Right.
They won't tell you that.
Right.
That means 100 million people watched it. They won't tell you that number.
Right.
Which, you know, who knows? It's been streamed 100 million times or whatever.
Right. From when to when though.
Exactly.
What's the window?
There's a window in here. It says here are the top 20 Netflix originals with seasons watched within the first 24 hours. Okay, that's I'm sorry. So these aren't the binge ones. So you know what they're saying is these are all Netflix original shows.
Right.
When they drop, they're saying the entire season is right. Watched within the first 24 hours. This is the order they're watched in. That makes sense. Wow, Fuller House and Gilmore Girls. And wow, people are really into those. That makes sense now.
Right. Well, also in fairness, that Gilmore Girls original was only
four episodes, right? Yeah, so and that's
Fuller
fair.
And House is anywhere from 9 to 13, so you can watch those in a day.
That's fair.
That is, I mean, yeah, that's a good point because like all shows aren't created equal in terms of the rollout.
Right, makes sense.
So that's not really saying much then.
No, Netflix, forget you this whack ass misleading data. All right. I think that's it. That's going to do it for us today. Anything else, John, you got?
Oh, man. I made it through, bro. We made it through.
Yeah, we made it through. Neither of us died. So that's good. Then we'll see you next week. Where can the people find you?
They can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Akili Shine, AKILISHINE. And where can they find you, my brother?
On Twitter and Instagram at JoeKBraswell.com. Joe K. Braswell, at Joe K. Braswell. That's all I got.
You got a website now?
I don't know.
Okay, what you doing, bro? You doing some modeling, bro?
All right. That's all I got. Thank you very much.
We out.
Bye.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagramming at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
Be defined.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.